From Peoria Public Radio, this is Out and About. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Suzette Boulay with Arts Partners of Central Illinois. This week we're talking with Kristen McKenzie from the Peoria Riverfront Museum about two of their current exhibits, Ansel Adams' Western Exposure, which runs through September 22nd, and Lincoln Self-Made in America, which runs through August 26th. Kristen, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with the Ansel Adams exhibit. Part of this is a set of 120 of his photos of the American West, and we're all familiar with Adams' work. But in addition to the photos, you've also got some other artifacts and memorabilia on display.
Right. We have photo albums, photo album of him as a little boy, the photo album he put together the fourth summer he went to Yosemite, photos he took of his kids, of his parents, photos of him by other people, awards he won, a wonderful cartoon that Gary Trudeau did of Ansel at Inspiration Point overlooking Yosemite Valley. So a lot of personal items.
Well, and I think that that would be a good sort of counterpoint to the photos, because we're all familiar with the work, but I think sometimes then we don't become familiar with him as a human being and an artist.
Right, and that is the idea of this. This collection comes from Ansel himself. It's mostly what was left in the house when he died, and his son Michael and his wife Jean live there now. Jean's actually the guest curator of the exhibit, and her goal is for us to come away both understanding Ansel better as a person, but also looking differently, because many of the works in this exhibit are ones you haven't seen before. Some of them have not been published. Only the family has them. They're not all landscapes. There's a lot of topics you don't necessarily expect. So there are some wonderful surprises, including a few works in color.
And what do we take back from this exhibit? What do we learn about him personally?
Well, I hope there's a lot of things, but I do hope that we do understand his passion for the landscape, both as a photographer, but then as a preservationist, his work with the Sierra Club, and beyond that, his work lobbying with Congress and other organizations and presidents themselves. We come away with his passion for photography and how that changed over time, because there are several images that he printed back in the 20s and 30s. So we're not just looking at how he saw himself late in life, but we're also looking at what he was doing as he was still thinking he was going to be a professional musician, but had this passion for photography. And then eventually it switched and he realized he could be a professional photographer. I think also even how we look at the landscape ourselves from this.
You had said that you've got some photos that he took that aren't landscapes. They're portraits. And that, I find that fascinating, because you never think of Ansel Adams as being a portrait photographer. So what does that add to our picture of who he is?
Well, for one thing, a lot of these are portraits of his favorite people. There are other photographers, they are poets, there are other famous, important people. So you do get a sense of his social circle and his social life. But there's also portraits of just people that he crossed paths with in the course of doing his work. So itinerant farmers, people at the Manzanar internment camp during World War II, just a really wide range of people. I mean, the other thing, too, as you said, not just landscapes, there are farming photos as well. But sometimes we think of these grand, large vistas of a wilderness. There are also a lot of detailed images of rocks up close, a pine cone. There's a photograph of just a pine cone. So again, really drawing you in and showing you that his passion was not just for the whole landscape, but it was for the little individual parts in it as well. And he was seeing all those things.
I very much appreciated the fact that the artwork is in various sections. The section on farming, the section on the foothills, Yosemite, the section on the missions. Who actually puts the work together?
Well, in this case, Jean Adams, the daughter-in-law of Ansel himself, is the guest curator. And she worked with Corey Tibbetts, our exhibit designer. And we made some adjustments over time. She had an idea of what grouping she wanted and how they would flow from one to another. But then, of course, we had to work with our space, which Corey knows well. So it was a collaborative process between them. It also means that you can really come several times and sort of take one or two sections each time you come. I've encouraged people to do that. Go back and do a little reading between sessions. Have your own little study group, as it is.
Some other items that you've included are some drawings and sketches that he did. And again, this is just one of those things that I think when at least when I think of Ansel Adams, I never think of him sitting down with a pad and drawing something by hand.
Well, if you know a lot about him, it's hard to imagine that as a child he could have done that. As an adult, he might have. He was hyperactive as a child. There is a wonderful color drawing he did of the Golden Gate. And this is the entrance into San Francisco Bay, which is now spanned by the Golden Gate Bridge. But the bridge didn't exist when his house overlooked that area. And so there's a wonderful drawing he did there, complementing a photograph he took again before the bridge was built. I guess that also helps us, in addition to the photograph, see what he saw, see how he was envisioning compositions. And in each of his photographs, he knew when he took it, as he was preparing to take it, what he wanted the final print to look like. So he was visualizing, that's his word, how all of the different aspects between the aperture, the film speed, filters he would have over the lens, what he was going to do in the darkroom, how that would all come out. One of his most famous vertical images of Half Dome he actually took with a Hasselblad camera, which of course makes square images. But he knew which part of that he was going to eliminate and which part he would keep.
You mentioned the color piece. The color pieces are few, but they stand out like a sore thumb because there's all that black and white. But I loved reading when he said if color had been more available to him, of course he would have done more color.
Right, although it would have been very different because you don't see the differentiation of objects in the same way in color as you do in black and white. And of course, working in black and white, he was able to emphasize the different tonal ranges of each work. People do ask, would he have embraced digital photography? Absolutely. He embraced the microwave even in that it helped him speed up the development process when he was testing a print. First deciding how he wanted to print it, it has to dry before after it comes out of the developer, and the microwave would speed that up. So he would have liked digital.
And also in the exhibit, you've got one of his actual cameras. Mm-hmm. And for me, at least, that would seem to be as iconic as, say, Hemingway's typewriter.
Yes.
Just, you know, just this wonderful piece
right.
of history.
Of course, Ansel owned a lot of cameras over the course of his career. So this is just one. And I wish we could absolutely say this is the one he took this particular image with. In some cases, they do know that. But it is fun. It's sort of like that 8 degrees of separation. Something that he touched and something that he mm-hmm. used. It also really helps people to understand what was involved in lugging a tripod, a large view camera, the glass plates up the mountain. Now, some of his climbing, he was lugging that on his back. If it was more back in the high countries, he had a burro carrying all of that. But nonetheless, it was an arduous process, and you had to be pretty strong and capable to do that. It's not like your little cell phone today.
Any chance that Michael Adams will come back for another presentation?
Yes. The one he did in April was so sold out, so well received, that he is coming back the last Sunday in August to do this again. Presentation about his father's work. It will be the last Sunday, as I said, in August in the Giant Screen Theater. So we will be projecting the images on our screen that's 70 feet wide and 52 feet tall. Michael was with his father when he took some of these images. Michael, of course, knew his father well. Michael lives with these works, and it's a wonderful presentation. I highly recommend, if you're interested, go ahead and call the museum and make your reservation. There'll be a reception at 5, and then the lecture at 6, and there's a $20 charge for members and $25 for non-members.
And the Lincoln exhibit consists of 7 different learning stations.
Yes, or kiosks.
Uh-huh. Okay, and do these sort of take you chronologically through his life, or are they more thematic?
Both, actually. It works out that way. It does start with him as a young boy learning to read by candlelight, and then works its way through high points in his career, critical moments, you know, becoming a lawyer. He was a congressman for a while, of course, then running for president, and it concludes with his assassination. Panels of information, photographs, quite a variety of ways to gather the information, as well as reproduction artifacts. The real artifacts are in the Presidential Museum and Library in Springfield, and part of a very important collection of Lincolniana that the museum has acquired in the last couple of years. And this has been traveling to a variety of museums and is here until the end of August.
The work is very authentic looking, the stovetop hat and the bloody glove.
Yes.
What are some other items that we'll see?
There's some daguerreotypes, photographs, early reading books, just basically the tools of the trade as he went along through his career.
And are any of these being duplicated elsewhere, that this particular exhibit, there are 10 of them and they're all around the United States, or this one particularly travels?
This exhibit is a unique one, traveling from the museum in Springfield. They may be making plans to travel it further. I think it's ended up being more popular than they realized.
And just listening to you talk, it never even occurred to me that one of the challenges that you face or your curators face is not just selecting which pieces to include, but also to arrange them in such a way that they tell a story and convey information. That's I've always thought of a museum as just sort of being a collection of stuff,
and there are people who somehow assume that exhibits just make themselves and they just appear. But no, we have to make the selection. We have to, as you say, decide what things go together. How do they tell a story together? Do they play off of one another? We have to decide what information to share, make the label, decide what case things go in, do the lighting. It's a bit of a process for curators and exhibit designers. It was a lot of fun.
One of the workers when I was there at the museum said, and take note that in the kiosk there's something at a foot and a half level, then
right.
There's something at 3 foot level, then 4.5 foot level. So you see the different tiers.
Right, and we've become much more conscious in the last 20 years, certainly, of having different types of information for different learners, from children to adults, and then having it at different eye levels, again, for children or somebody who might be in a wheelchair or somebody standing.
It sounds like in order to curate an exhibit these days, you almost have to develop a curriculum for the artifacts. It's not just about the aesthetics of the pieces.
That's true. And that's certainly the background that I come out of. Yes.
Do you write all that information, all those beautiful paragraphs that explain?
Well, it varies. When I'm the curator of the show, then yes. So for permanent collection, that's all my writing. For the Ansel Adams exhibit in this case, because Jean Adams was the curator, she wrote that. I did a little tiny bit of help, but that's pretty much her labeling. And then Lincoln came with the exhibit.
I very much like the fact that they're not long. People don't want 2-3 pages of information. It's a paragraph or so.
Right. That's always a trick to figure out. And I always try to put the most important thing in the first paragraph. So you could read that and then get bored if you want to.
And so is there an overall message or theme that you're hoping people will walk away from after they've seen this? Or
yes.
Are you just hoping that they'll take what they take?
Of course, whatever is meaningful to a visitor, I applaud. But the goal of this exhibit and the reason for the title, Abraham Lincoln, Self-Made Man, is to talk about how he made himself into what he was. And they don't just mean his career-wise, but his ethics, his morals, the guiding principles of his life, which is something different than we might mean today when we talk about a self-made person. Today, we may mean, yes, maybe they started from poverty, but they became a millionaire. And they founded some amazing, important company that changed life for people. But there's more basic elements than that. So I think that the exhibit was really trying to show at each stage of his life, as he met obstacles, as he had new challenges, as he set new goals for himself, how that helped him grow as a person, as a man.
What I took back is to see him as the father, to see him as the president, to see him as the politician, to see him as the man through the Civil War, all these different roles he had to play and work through all of them.
And they were difficult. He really did have a lot of challenges, but he stuck to what he believed, sometimes against popular opinion, and look at the success. I mean, he always was looking at the larger picture and at the far goal, not the little short steps.
We've been talking with the Peoria Riverfront Museum's Kristen McKenzie. Their exhibit, Lincoln, Self-Made in America, continues through August 22nd. Ansel Adams' Western Exposure is on display until September 22nd. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Nathan, here it is, the first Friday of the month again, and that means local area artists are opening their studio doors to the public. Tonight from 5 to 9 p.m., you can visit nearly a dozen locations and purchase beautiful original art and see artist demonstrations. Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
Our producer is Nikki Garibrandt. You can find out more about Peoria Public Radio when you visit us on the web at peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.